Time to gather again. I know it's really hard to leave that wonderful table. For those of you who are still in the lobby having food, I don't blame you. Thank you to the black group today for the food. It was really, really good. Especially the almond croissants, whoever brought those. Anyway, thank you very much. And just a reminder that the white group is responsible for next week. I just want to do a special thank you to Ginny Troutwine. Is she here or she's still back there? Ginny does a job here that is totally thankless, and we don't see it, but it's really, really important. She makes our coffee. You walk in. It all looks perfect. It looks like somebody came here and just put out this incredible spread, and you can smell the coffee when you walk in. That's not an easy task, and it's a high calling. And I thank you, Ginny, even though you're out there. Steve.
Okay, I'll just say a little bit more, and then let's open it up. For any questions or comments you might have. I'll just say before we say a little bit more about La Casa, you know, obviously what I've done is kind of make a kind of a personal testimony today, but it's because when I was reading the book, it felt like there were a lot of concepts and that were fascinating, but I've always wanted to know, well, what do they look like on the ground, you know, in our lives? So that's why I kind of veered differently than I would usually do to really think about, well, what does this mean in our lives? So I told my experiences of grace of Jesus and the creation, the mystery of that, and the presence of the Spirit. So anyway, it was kind of a decision I made because I had a hard time knowing what else I would do with the book. And, you know, and as some of you have heard me present before, I love to show movie clips. And I kept trying to think, what movie clip to show in the Trinity? And I couldn't really come up with one. And I could come up with some pieces, but anyway. So just want to close with this last little piece, because a lot of you know La Casa. La Casa is so interesting as a place of the grounds where people from all religions come, people of no faith come, and they feel a similar blessing. And to me, I have never seen a place more saturated in the mystery of the Spirit in a quiet way than La Casa is, and it's just extraordinary. But not to spend a lot of time on this, but you know, I didn't read every page of Rohrer's book. Did he talk at all about the feminine or Mary at all in the book? Because it's interesting, and I'm not Catholic, you know, but I've had a deep appreciation of Mary since my days at the monastery. I'm sorry? Another book, okay. But, you know, just having been through the last 50 years, when I was a seminary, you know, where is the feminine? Is this all masculine stuff? And so with Bayermo out there is where I had some experiences where Mary really became real to me. I didn't tell my Presbyterian supervisors that, but it was quite fascinating, you know. And I got it. I thought, well, this is why. So much of the Catholic world really has a profound connection with Mary. La Casa is La Casa de Maria, you know. And if Don George was here, she could probably help me with the exact detail. But if I'm correct, when at the beginning of the 1900s, when the Catholic Church made some official theological declaration that really gave Mary an even higher status, Carl Jung said something like, well, finally, the feminine is in the concept of God. Mm-hmm. You know, and I remember thinking, well, Jung was kind of a skeptic. So it was interesting that he would say that. So we're not going to go into that at all, except I just couldn't help but think about Trinity and Father, Son, Spirit. And I want to say, well, where's the feminine, you know? And certainly that, and what's that?
It's the energy.
It's the energy, yeah. So it kind of it begged the question for me, and so I just put the question out there because I think, and I'll just say, La Casa these wonderful grounds with all these statues, and we've been aware some years ago that they're all great Catholic statues, but we have a lot of different traditions coming. So we built a Jewish Shalom garden, we built an Islamic Salam garden, we built a Buddhist Kuan Yin garden that Anna was instrumental in helping make happen. And about a month ago, for several days at La Casa, we had 125 Vietnamese Buddhist lay people there, all in gray robes, doing chanting and learning about Buddhism from their Chinese-speaking or Vietnamese-speaking teacher. And one day I drove into the gates of La Casa, and there was one of the Vietnamese Buddhist people in their gray robe taking a really careful picture of Our Lady of Fatima. You know? So it was really interesting, because we tend to think, you know, we're showing this other way, but people from the other traditions are also seeing the other direction. So it was like, well, that's really great, because this is the global community, you know? And that's what La Casa has aspired to be. So let's just open it up then for some questions, and then I do want to think about hymns. So any comments about the whole, everything that I laid out there? And by the way, if you have to leave early, no problem. It's never bothered me if people leave. So, Jackie.
I had to jump in here because you said you didn't have a movie to show. Have you seen The Shack?
I haven't.
Or read the book? The book is not a terrific, it's not a terrifically well-written book, but it's got a terrific message in it. And The Shack, I thought the movie was even better than the book, which
okay.
is rare. But see if you can find that on Netflix,
okay.
and you will have your Holy Spirit, and you will have your Trinity, and you will have
all
your right. feminine concept. And it's all right there. And, of course, it didn't get much in the way of reviews or stay longer in Santa Barbara than 2 weeks. It was kind of unmentioned and slipped mm-hmm. on through. But those of us who saw it were tremendously moved by it.
Wonderful. I've heard that. So I need to...
The one who wrote the
Polar Bear. For Rohr's book, right? Yeah.
I believe Richard Rohr has read it, too, because at one point, I think in his meditations that we get every day, he had mentioned the book The Shack. Oh, well, no wonder.
Well, thank you, Jackie. Okay. I appreciate that.
I just thought I'd call that to your attention.
Yeah. Any other comments or questions? Yeah, sure.
There is a communion song that we don't do very often, but besides the music of it, I just love the title. It says, I receive the living God, and my heart is full of joy.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. Well, it makes me think... please.
Thank you for all you do at the Casa. It's always been a special place for me. I wish I could get there more often. I have a couple of things to say. I went to an all-girls Catholic high school, and we did spend the month of May talking about Mary. We celebrated Mary big time. We had a May crowning. We had little altars at home in our bedrooms with statues and flowers. That sort of thing was very sentimental, but it meant a lot at that time for a teenage girl. Also, I think as Catholics, we have a gift about the Trinity, and that is the sign of the cross. And I never really thought about it too much until I was teaching my granddaughters grace. They don't hear a lot about God at home, but at our house we always say grace for the evening meal. And so when we said grace, I did it more deliberately when I said the sign of the cross. It was in the name of the Father mm-hmm. and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, which I had always done hurriedly as a child. It was more like this. And so they liked it, these two little granddaughters. And they still enjoy grace and say it perfectly, the whole thing. And I'm just thankful that we have that sign of the cross. It's such a reminder of the Trinity, and I'm just beginning to realize how powerful that is. So that I'd share that.
That's wonderful. Yeah, that's great. Nope, okay. Shake it. So I'll just say, did you want to speak? Yeah, please.
I just wanted to thank you for the your formless grace. It's a powerful, powerful thing. You said formless grace came into my life. And I think that many of us separate spirituality and life, but we all experience formless grace. Mm-hmm. So for me, I want to take that concept and invite that and notice it and say that is the Trinity alive in me. Mm-hmm. And we all experience formless grace, but we segregate these parts of ourselves, or I'm guilty of that sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I love formless grace because it's such an expander for living. Living with formless grace. So thank you for the concept. Very powerful. I'm very grateful.
You're welcome. Absolutely.
Hi, I forgot to say we do have something else in common. Mm-hmm. Go Vin Scully.
Yeah.
He looked so good last night. He's 90 years old. Sorry, I just had to say that. Did anybody watch that game last night? God. I was crazy. Anyway, back to the hymns.
Hymns.
One of my favorites, and we don't sing it much at the mission because they're so good, they don't invite us to sing, I think, or whatever. I don't know. But anyway, it's called Be Not Afraid. You remember that one? Be not afraid, I go before you always. Come follow me, and I will give you grace or peace. And then
rest, isn't it? Rest.
Rest. That's even better. No. And then when you cross the barren desert, come on, you guys. You will not be afraid. You will not die of thirst. Yeah, it's just so profound to me.
Powerful hymn.
And what you said about the Christmas music, I've always, the last 5 years, I think, the words are just pop out at you. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that. Thank you for your talk.
You know, one clip I was going to play was with Be Not Afraid, which is in the movie Dead Man Walking. It is so powerful. I played it once for a Good Friday service at my church. But it's where the Susan Sarandon character, the nun, it's the moment when the prisoner, who's a murder rapist, is struggling to really say his guilt. And he's crying, and he's really struggling. And it's a beautiful scene where she just starts singing it in kind of a halting voice of Be Not Afraid. And that's what kind of, that's the grace moment when he kind of, it just melts his all of his pain. Well, anyway, it's a beautiful thing. It's a great clip, and it's that hymn. And, you know, Be Not Afraid, when I think about it, I'm not sure, just to play with these things, I'm not sure if that's referring to God or Jesus or the Spirit. I don't know. Doesn't make a difference. All three, maybe. You know, I don't know if they're named, you know, is what I'm saying. So it's interesting to think sometimes about. I guess what started me thinking about hymns is that I remember years ago reading Bishop Pike, Episcopal bishop, controversial guy, but I remember him saying once he got to the point where he could no longer say the creed, but he could sing it. And there's things, that concepts that we work on that we get to a place trying to understand and we're like, I just don't know. But here's the hymn. Oh, I can sing that. And I think it because it shifts from that analytical side back to the more imaginative and open. And so the music, even if sometimes the words are archaic, it doesn't seem to matter. I mean, at least for me, it just, and some of, well, anyway, there's just a beauty in them. Like Holy, 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 in my church, there was one soprano who would always sing the descant towards the end, and that just melted me every time, you know? And that's that majesty. And I think Roar was trying to say, we don't want God, even though we want to experience God very real and within and moving around and we're in this relationship, we also want to have that sense of awe. Because that's the proper ontological relationship, is something incredibly beyond us and yet loves and cares for us. So. Other hymns that are favorites of Trinity as a hymn, a Trinitarian hymn, or a God is Creator, Jesus, or Holy Spirit hymn? Lee said he had to go, so this wasn't a question that made him uncomfortable.
Taze prayer, ubi caritas.
Ubi caritas.
And many of you only used to see me with two little boys. I just want to share, those two little boys are now 30-somethings.
Wow.
And we had Father Vince Macy as our pastor at Old Mission Santa Barbara, and the three of us, Trinitarian, mom and two little boys, the songs we heard on Sunday, we sang and danced to all week until the next Sunday. And then from there, we also made up our own songs. Neither child became a preacher or a priest. However, in their own family lives now, they are teaching their children their own songs. Mm-hmm. And they're not professional musicians. So it's... that's the way, for some of us, it's a dance. Others, it's music. Some, are, it's contemplative prayer. Whatever God gifts you with, in whatever way you receive His love, the beauty is that we are all, each one of us is so unique in the way we then pass down to those we love in our family and friends. Thank you.
Amen. Absolutely. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. Any comments or... I got a few more things I can finish with, but good. Okay, let's go. So this is kind of some. I'm going to close with a reading from Dante. But I think Christianity is Trinitarian. Even you just can't get away from it, and there's no reason to. Just how do we make all that make sense? Century by century by century is going to evolve, and I think sometimes we do need a hierarchy. I remember Houston Smith, who's one of my heroes at the Libero some years ago, his talk here was five things that you don't want to hear to the audience with a big smile. And he said one of them is that not all hierarchies are bad. Because there's a move in our culture to flatten everything out in because we've seen the dark side of hierarchies, the way it can repress and all that. But he said, you know, if you want to learn the piano, you look for somebody who knows more than you, and you want to learn from them. You accept that. And we should not confuse that with social relations of any group dominating another. But it makes me think, too, when I taught in Washington, a little college there, and I taught comparative religion, and one thing I would do was have one of the local treatment centers, drug and rehab treatment center guys, come and talk about the spirituality of recovery. And he was talking about how people in recovery all have to find some way to think about their highest power. For some it's God, some it's Jesus, some maybe if that's a challenge for them, they find something that works. And I said, well, what's similar between them all? And he said, submission. It's what's something that's really good that I need to serve something more than myself. And I need to, and he said, so I try to help people find what's a good, there's bad submission, that's not it. But in the way, like for me, you know, the kneeling benches are in churches because there's something grand and glorious there. So I think sometimes we need a hierarchy, not in social relations in a harmful way, but in a spiritual way. I'd love to feel so moved that I want to kneel and just lift up. I think what you were saying about children and things, maybe each of us finds the dance steps that keep us in tune, you know? I think we're always kind of saying we all need to be in this communal movement, and I think one of the things I loved about my parish work, again, with that image of seeing each person come through the door thinking, where is the Spirit leading them? People disperse as they're led to different ways of serving. I know in my congregation there were two Walts, retired guys, both named Walt. Walt Gray and Walt Eby. And Walt Gray was a retired big project engineer from GE. And so he was on all the big committees. And Walt Eby had enough of committees. And he never wanted to be on a committee. But he was always there at the coffee hour. And he had he was a Midwestern guy, quiet, reserved. But he had an instinct for who came as a visitor today that wouldn't mind somebody just coming along and just quietly making contact, especially teenagers or something. So one was all about committees. One of them was like, no committees for me. They were both pillars of the church, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like we each have a calling. This is good theology, you know. The Spirit calls each of us for a common purpose. And so life is about trying to figure out, you know, what are we hearing and where do we fit in? And then I just want to say this thing, which I call what Dorothy Phillips taught me unknowingly. 1982 in Santa Paula, where I was first at a seminary, loved my big books, hoped everybody would see how many books I had on my bookshelf about the mystery of God and everything. And there was a woman in the choir who didn't sing on tune, which I didn't notice that much, but the choir members would quietly say, "Oh, Dorothy, did they?" And she would write me these very sentimental kind of cards about dear Pastor Steve, and it was a lot of flowery language. I was like, what's important to me are the books, you know? And then we'd have, do you remember crop walks? Did you ever get involved in crop walks, Church World Service, walks against hunger? And so Dorothy was very big on raising money for crop walks. So one year when we got around to March, I think it was in March when they had the crop walks, and they were totaling up what everybody had raised. I think I'd raised like $150. She'd raised $12,000 for hunger because she started raising money as soon as one walk would end. She started raising it for the next year. And so I thought of what Dorothy did for the poor and how important I thought my books were. And it's not that they're not important, but it's like, who am I? You know, who am I? There's many gifts that go a lot of different directions. And I'm hopefully want to always thank her for who she was in that town, even in the choir. So perhaps we'll end. Sure. What the other ones are? There's no such thing as progress. No such thing as progress. He said when he was a young scholar, he went to Europe and at a conference and talked about all the wonderful things that were going to be happening in this new modern age. And when he was finished, an old European got up and said, "Professor Smith has spoken out of 200 years of American successes. I will now speak out of thousands of years of European failures," about the ups and downs of things. So Houston said, plumbing's gotten better. Race relations have gotten a little better. And it's interesting to think about it all now. Relationship of respect for women has gotten somewhat better. But there's still the human character to deal with. I mean, we're not perfecting all of our instincts. And he said, if you go through life trying to fix everything, you're going to find out at the end that you're really exhausted. But if you look at life and think of it as a spiritual gymnasium designed to teach you lasting lessons, you'll find that it's perfectly equipped. Look at life and you think of it as like a gymnasium that's going to teach you lasting lessons, you're going to find that it's perfectly equipped. Because sometimes, help me here, sometimes we go along in life and we look back and we're so grateful, well, we can be grateful for many, many, many things. But sometimes it also is an accumulation of disappointments and things that we regret, that we weren't able to do. We could have done better, could have done differently. But it's learning the lessons of humility and love and forgiveness and seeking justice and all those things. Those haven't changed in 3,000 years. So I think what Houston Smith is saying is that we get caught up in fixing things, and we should try to fix things, especially injustice, but that if we just endlessly chase that as if we have to fix it, everything before we're gone, we may find ourselves frustrated. Another one he said was, Darwin isn't totally right. And he talked about some real gaps in Darwinian evolution. And he says, a place like Santa Barbara, you don't want to hear this. And he talked about how he challenged the American teachers of biology that they needed to change something in their statement because they really needed to say that even though evolution is fabulous and it explains like 99% of life, there are a few gaps. And he said often that debate in America is people caricaturize the other side. So if I'm a really strong biblical person, I think every scientist is a godless, horrible person. And if I'm a scientist, I think everybody with a Bible is a mindless Bible thumper. But it says there's a huge middle ground. You know, a huge middle ground. Anyway, those are the three. If I think of four and five, I'll let you know. But I remember, and with every one of them, he had that little Kierkegaard smile. He would just smile because he knew everybody was getting a little restless. Okay, so... Come to the close. Okay, so Dante goes through all of his circles, goes down into Inferno and sees all the ways in which human beings bring on suffering unto themselves, don't accept the help of others or of God. Purgatory goes through all this where we're with we recognize that we're not perfect. We want to do the work that helps us become whole. And to do that, we need to be with other people. And interesting, in Purgatory, as people are climbing Mount Purgatory, they're singing. Music's a big part of how do we go along in life. So Paradise, he ascends up into Paradise. It's kind of wonderful. He gets taken up, flies up there. And he goes through all these circles, which are quite extraordinary. Here's one ancient British little manuscript of him being lifted up. And then he gets toward the end, the 33rd circle, or the 33rd chapter of the canto. Gets there, this white rose unfolds, and he sees Mary, and he sees all the angels and the saints and everything. And it's this extraordinary vision. And then here's how it ends. He comes really close to see this great light. Within that living light on which I looked, and which is always what it was before, in other words, it's eternal, but by the sight that gathered strength in me as I gazed on, what was one in appearance was altering for me as I was changing. So he's watching something, and it starts to change, and he realizes he's kind of changing. In the profound and shining clear existence of the deep light appeared to me three circles of one dimension and three different colors. So it's kind of a mystical vision. He looks, he sees this deep light. He's getting like right in there. It appeared to me three circles of one dimension, so all the same size, but three different colors. One seemed to be reflected by the other, rainbow by rainbow, while the third seemed fire breathed equally from one and from the other. So it's like two of them are kind of working, reflecting each other, the Creator and Jesus. And then the third is like a ring of fire that's circling them all, like the Spirit. Breathed like the Spirit equally from one and the other. Oh, how pale now is language, and how paltry for my conception. And for what I saw, my words are not enough to call them meager. He doesn't even have enough words to say how meager is his ability to try to describe this. Oh, everlasting light, you dwell alone in yourself, know yourself alone, and known, and knowing, love, and knowing, love and smile upon yourself. So there's this great beauty of God's delight and joy and glory. The middle circle, which appeared in you to be conceived as a reflected light, after my eyes have studied it a while, within itself and in its coloring seemed to be painted with our human likeness, so that my eyes were completely focused on it. It's as if the incarnation is starting to appear, this human form of this divine light. So he feels like he's really getting close to seeing everything. As the geometry specialist who sets himself to square the circle and who cannot find, this was a medieval mathematician's thing of trying to figure out the circumference of a circle and a square. Anyway, a puzzle. For all his thought, the principle he needs, just so was I on seeing this new vision. I wanted to see how our image fuses into the circle and finds its place in it. My own wings were far too weak for that. So he's really close, but he can't quite get up there. But then my mind was struck by light that flashed. And with this light, received what it had asked. So he gets really close, he wants to understand it, and he's not going to make it, but then this flashes, and then he finds what he needs. Here force failed my high fantasy, but my desire and will were moved already, like a wheel revolving uniformly by the love that moves the sun and the other stars. So here force failed my high fantasy. I can't, my mind doesn't work anymore. But my desire to know and my will of what I'm going to do, these were moved already like a wheel that's just beautifully turning. And what's making that wheel go around in us? By the love that moves the sun and other stars. And that's where his book ends. And in his three books, Inferno, Purgatory, Paradise, each of them ends with the Italian word stella, stars. Star, star, and this one ends stars, of gazing out to heaven. Oh, well, there we go. Great to be with you, everybody.